Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, Polling Places and Political Apparel Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On February 28, 2018, the Supreme Court heard argument in Minnesota Voters Alliance v. Mansky, a case involving a Minnesota statute that broadly bans all political apparel at the polling place. Minnesota Statute Section 211B, Subsection 11, prohibits voters from wearing a political badge, political button, or other political insignia at or about the polling place on primary or election day. State election officials indicated that political apparel included issue-oriented material designed to influence or impact voting, or material promoting a group with recognizable political views. If a person arrived at a polling place wearing a political item, the election judges were instructed to ask the individual to remove or cover the item. If the individual refused to comply, he or she would still be allowed to vote, but the person's name and address would be recorded for a potential misdemeanor prosecution. An association of various Minnesota political groups known as Election Integrity Watch, EIW, sued the Secretary of State and county election officials in federal district court, alleging that the statute was invalid both facially and as applied under the First Amendment, and violated the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause due to selective enforcement. Although the district court initially dismissed all claims, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 8th Circuit reversed that judgment with respect to EIW's as-applied First Amendment claim, and remanded the case. On remand, the district court again ruled against EIW, granting summary judgment in favor of the defendants. On a second appeal, the 8th Circuit affirmed the district court's judgment, but the United States Supreme Court thereafter granted certiorari to determine whether Minnesota Statute Section 211B, Subsection 11, is facially overbroad under the First Amendment. And now, to discuss the case, we have Timothy Sandifer, Vice President for Litigation at the Goldwater Institute.
It seems as American as apple pie. A voter heads to the polling place on election day wearing her shirt with a picture of the Constitution or the American flag and the words Liberty or Don't Tread on Me. It's hard to imagine something more harmless. But in Minnesota, as in many places, that's against the law. In fact, Minnesota forbids a person from wearing a shirt, hat, button, or other material that features the logo of an organization with recognizable political views when she enters the polling place. Whether that prohibition violates the First Amendment is the question the Supreme Court has been asked to decide in Minnesota Voters Alliance versus Mansky, a case argued in late February. The idea behind this kind of restriction is that the polling place must be free from so-called electioneering, allowing political activists to pressure voters or even bribe or threaten them right as they enter the voting booth would obviously be a concern in a democratic society that cherishes the secret ballot. And in the 1992 case of Burson versus Freeman, the Supreme Court upheld a Tennessee law that prohibited the distribution or display of election materials within 100 feet of a polling place. Burson was a divided opinion that produced no majority. Four justices applied the demanding strict scrutiny rule that governs restrictions of free speech, but held that the restriction satisfied that high standard because the reason for the restriction was an especially important one, and the restriction was narrowly tailored to achieve that end. Justice Scalia wrote separately. He did not think strict scrutiny necessary, a less demanding standard applied, in his view, but the Tennessee law passed that test. Justices Stevens, O'Connor, and Souter thought that the strict scrutiny rule applies, but that the Tennessee law didn't satisfy it. Minnesota's lawyers argue that their prohibition on t-shirts and buttons is constitutional under the Tennessee precedent, but the Minnesota law is different. It applies not to attempts to pressure or intimidate voters, but to speech that's basically passive, just an ordinary t-shirt or baseball cap. The Minnesota law is also extremely broad, far more than the Tennessee restriction. The plaintiffs in the case focused heavily on this point in their arguments, pointing out that voters wouldn't even be allowed to wear a shirt with the ACLU's logo on it. or a shirt that said hashtag me too. That's because the Minnesota rule forbids not just actual electioneering speech of the vote for Smith variety, but any speech that's politically oriented and designed to persuade or influence voters. Such extreme breadth, they argue, exceeds the limits of the Tennessee precedent. The breadth of the Minnesota restriction was made clear during the oral argument when Justice Alito asked the state's lawyer if a voter could wear a shirt that contained the text of the Second Amendment. The answer was no. That would be viewed as too political. What about the First Amendment? Asked Alito. That, the lawyer answered, would be okay, probably. But the Minnesota lawyers argue that if the Tennessee precedent allows a total prohibition on speech within 100 feet of a polling place, then surely the government has more control over speech inside the polling place. That isn't a public forum at all. It's a non-public forum, and the government is free to stop speech on any topic that it wants in a non-public forum. Since it's legitimate for the government to maintain order and decorum in the polling place, and since polling places are not traditionally set aside for political debate, the prohibition on political speech is okay. And it applies across the board, not to one political group over another, making it the sort of even-handed rule that should satisfy the court's free speech precedents that give government broad discretion to forbid speech in non-public forums. But in its friend of the court brief, the Goldwater Institute, which successfully litigated similar t-shirt cases in Phoenix and Flagstaff just a few years ago, pointed out that the government doesn't have carte blanche to forbid speech, even in non-public forums and government buildings. For instance, in the 1969 case of Tinker versus Des Moines, the court held that school children had the right to wear black armbands to protest the Vietnam War, even in classrooms, where the government has a lot more authority than it has in a polling place. And in the 1971 case of Cohen versus California, the court said a man could wear a jacket in a courthouse that had an obscenity painted on the back as part of a political protest. In those cases, the court said that government could censor that speech, but only if it could show some real evidence that the speech would cause a disruption. There's no evidence that Minnesota voters will cause disruption wearing t-shirts. On the contrary, the evidence shows that the only disruption was caused when Minnesota polling place workers tried to order voters to take off their hats or to cover up their shirts. Voters who refused to comply were threatened or were forced to wait for hours before finally being allowed to vote. Even in government workplaces, the government cannot simply ban speech out of fear that it might cause disruption. In a 1996 case called Tucker versus California Department of Education, the Ninth Circuit held that the government could not ban employees from putting up religious symbols or posters in their offices without proof that this was actually causing disruption. And the government certainly has less authority over the free speech rights of voters on Election Day than it has over its own employees in government-owned buildings. Another factor that undermines the state's argument is the fact that the Minnesota law allows voters to vote by mail, meaning that a person can fill out his ballot in his kitchen while listening to Rush Limbaugh or Rachel Maddow, but can't wear a shirt that depicts the Gadsden flag when he goes to vote. Disabled voters in Minnesota are even allowed to vote from their cars in the polling place parking lot while listening to talk radio. If the state is concerned about political communication influencing voters while they cast their ballots, these loopholes would have to be closed. But that's just the problem with the Minnesota law. It goes beyond prohibiting intimidation or disruption in the polling place, which are legitimate goals, and tries to also censor speech that could persuade or influence. But persuasion and influence are harmless activities in themselves. In fact, they're the most sacred of all First Amendment values. Government should be allowed to ban them only in the most extreme cases, and the Minnesota case isn't extreme. If a person wants to wear a shirt that says, "Make America Great Again," to the polling place, it's simply no skin off anyone's nose. The Minnesota law seems to assume that voters are so delicate that they can't be expected to calmly cast a ballot alongside someone who wears a button with a slogan one disagrees with. In that sense, it echoes recent conflicts over freedom of speech on college campuses, where the mere expression of an unpopular opinion is deemed the equivalent of physical violence entitling others to retaliate with force. But the willingness to tolerate differences of opinion so long as they're peaceful is the only thing that makes a stable democracy possible. The Minnesota speech ban, with its enormous breadth and vagueness, is an invitation to discriminatory enforcement and censorship that, ironically, will result in exactly the sort of intimidation and disruption that the state claims it's trying to prevent. The bottom line should be simple. States can prohibit speech in polling places if that speech is intimidating or disruptive, but it can't prohibit efforts to persuade or simple self-expression. In fact, we should encourage people to express themselves in peaceful and non-disruptive ways when they go to the polling place to do just that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.